Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. I have a good friend of mine. We've been on this journey together. We know each other in real life. So it's been quite a journey for the last 3 years. And we both have been at points where we wanted to just throw our hands up, walk away, move out of to wherever, and live our lives off the grids because it got so difficult just continuing on this journey. She is a real journalist who found a story a couple of years ago that you'll all be familiar with, and she refused to give up, refused to back down, has spent 2 years investigating and putting together a mind-blowing, game-changing documentary about the George Floyd incident. I am honored to welcome back Maryam Hanin. How are you, my friend?
I'm honored to be here too, Mel. I think we've come a long way, and kudos to you too. And whenever I'm on the show with you, I get so many compliments, and doing a show together and our energy. And I'm really grateful for you also acknowledging the impact of this event and what it did to America.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing. The first thing about you, you've been a journalist for a long time. You've had your work published all over the place. You really had a lot of notoriety as an actual journalist, not as an investigative journalist that really digs in. And I think it's really important for people to understand what's happened before we get into the movie and its consequences and how big it is, and that we need to go back and revisit what really happened there. I want to talk a little bit about journalism and your journey, because as you became more and more invested in uncovering truth and finding transparency and like uncovering the nonsense of the, you know, things being suppressed for reasons of national security or FOIA requests, you know, rejected for bogus reasons. You really have fought this journey for a long time. And there's few true investigative journalists left, but you've paid a big price for that.
I have. So I also was in Hollywood, and I've worked on Hollywood sets and know, let's say, looking at this event, what could be manipulated, or like a Reno 911. When I first came from Canada, I worked at MSNBC above the Tonight Show in Burbank. And it was at a time when they were threatened by the internet, and they thought that if people logged on, they wouldn't tune in. And in fact, it was the advertising department that was in charge of our little news crew producing the news for MSNBC Online. And then I eventually quit because I was pretty appalled at the way NBC and all the networks cover the news, especially in LA with the drive-bys, spending $1 million just in chopper fuel to during sweeps. And so I left, and then I started hustling and freelancing, and I'd go once a year to New York and meet with editors. And I worked for Penthouse and The Hollywood Reporter and Maxim and so on and so forth in LA Magazine. And it was very exciting, and it was usually my stories that I would pitch, and I loved features and investigative. And then I had an accident, and I was hit by an SUV and dragged 50 feet. And it was really an initiation as a Canadian at a time where I still had health. I grew up with health. It was more socialist than communist. I didn't have a negative look at communism or socialism per se. And I saw the way I was treated as a person that needed to learn how to walk again. And that was an initiation into health and wellness. And I used myself as a guinea pig. And then the bees flew into my life. And I made this film that was, you know, when you consider like an award-winning filmmaker, this movie has been shown everywhere. Ellen Page, who wasn't even out as a lesbian, let alone a boy, when she narrated my movie.
Right.
And then blowing the whistle on Bayer and being threatened my livelihood then, and really not understanding the full scope of these mafioso big pharma players. But that was really, I looked into Rockefeller. And then as early as 2012, covering vaccines. And so this playbook, this Rona regime, by the time we come to 2020, we had seen it with Zika, or I had seen, I'd covered Zika and covered Merck, covered so on and so forth. And so then I started in 2019 I reread 1984, and then I came across Zach Voorhees because my online site, Honey Colony, was getting 500,000 unique visitors and it tanked. And I found out about the medic update. And then when I did research, I did a story that went viral for the Epoch Times where I interviewed Zach. And then I learned that Google was a drug company and that they were invested in the decade of vaccines. And it was actually me who told Zach like about that initiative and Calico and Verily and Alphabet's role also, and their work with Larry Brilliant, their work with Kurzweil, and so forth. And so kind of popularized techno-fascism, a term that I hear Jason Burmes say every single day. I love his work and follow him as well. And then kind of got on a shit list with the Rona, lost Twitter, had my bank account closed.
Yeah.
I'm banned on Amazon, even just on and on.
I remember when normalized. It started, because you were out there. We were there. Well, you were talking about vaccines way before anyone was talking. Years before. But I remember when this started because it was before the vaccine rollout, and they started to silence you. You were silenced very early with some of the frontline doctors, and it was very obvious that you were being targeted. And again, you also are very big. They're trying right now to ban any kind of natural remedies, all the things that you were working on when you found out about the bees and everything, and then started Honey Colony and all your products. They really want to ban all that stuff. And as you've exposed multiple times, this is the opposite of being about health. It is all about money. Everything ends up being all about money. And from seeing that corruption, then I saw it. I was there with you, and you were like, I cannot believe, like, it was like every day you were getting hit, and you weren't alone, but you were in the first phase of the government, big pharma, I think military industrial complex, international, crackdown. And it was weird because I didn't understand it. And people honestly thought like, is that real? Is what she's saying true? And I knew it was because we were talking behind the scenes, but it was so bizarre. And then it started happening on a mass scale. But you really were in that first wave of what is going on.
Yeah, Mel, I still talk to everyday people and they're like, your bank account was closed? How could they do that? You're not on Amazon. You're not on Airbnb. It's safe to say our names were on the 250,000 from the FBI. And also just to tell your audience as well that in March 2020, the FDA, FTC, DOJ launched Operation Quack Hack. And they came after me for selling vitamin C and silver, even though the government uses, the army uses silver, they know. And to remind people that Mark Grenon, when President Trump talked about swallowing detergent, that he was referencing chlorine dioxide, and that Mark was part also attacked under Operation Quack Hack, and 2 years plus is still in jail.
It's unbelievable. So, and I'm telling you, I saw an executive order that I talked about on a different show where they are going to try to get all homeopathic medicine, all of the vitamins and all the things that the FDA says they won't deal with, banned. I mean, they are, because Big Pharma is running the show. It's really, really sick. But you saw that. Now, let's segue into it. Really, I think that this is so important that the American people realize not only what happened with George Floyd, what happened before George Floyd, what happened to our country since George Floyd, and start to really look back. Because Miriam, we talk about it a lot, but I have to say, I've changed so much just in the last year alone in terms of my level of understanding, my discernment, my shock at what's going on within our government and internationally, geopolitically as well, in terms of manipulation, brainwashing, psyops, all of it. But I have to tell you, I feel like our country needs to go back to at least JFK, if not before, and get real journalists like you digging out the truth. And no matter how ugly it is, no matter how sad it is, we, the people of the United States, must know what's been done in our name and how we ended up where we are now, because all of these operations are real. And I see the push right now. My sister's a psychiatrist, and she had a She gets the journals and the American Psychiatric. These have been captured. She gets the American Psychiatric Journal the other day, and she knows what's real. There's two people in there, and this is to teach psychiatrists. And it basically says, why do people believe conspiracy theories? And they go through, and everything they're saying is provably true. But they are going to a generation of people that still read the medical journals that are not psychologists, psychiatrists who can give out drugs, setting up the need, I believe, to start treating people that believe truth as mental patients and as people that need to be medicated. Because psychiatry people don't always get, those are the people that are allowed to medicate as of right now. I know Biden and them want to allow teachers to medicate. But seriously, we have to really understand that the only way the American people, I believe, heal is by standing up and desiring to really know the facts and the truth of what's gone on in our name and expose the criminals, get to the bottom of it, accept maybe the grieving period of realizing how deceived we've been, and rebuild and heal from there. And this is a major part of it. So thank you so much for staying on this story. Your documentary.
Thank you for connecting dots and for being tireless in your work. And that's what I mean about coming a long way in the past 2 years when we started and we first met on Union of the Unwanted and seeing you blossom and how people love you because you're accessible and real. I just got the shivers. So thank you.
So did I, because I mean, I really want the American people to stand up and take back this country. And you can't do it if you don't know the truth about everything. Right. Everything. I'm talking everything. And that, I think we got a good shot at that. You're on the front lines. We have watched this unfold. First and foremost, when did you first, because you this is not, it's not that different going from where you were being persecuted, attacked, demonetized, deplatformed, because you were early on talking about pharma, medical industrial complex. You saw the COVID coming in. You said this was planned. Something's wrong. Bam. George Floyd happens.
Right.
You look at this and you say, no, I am going to go look at this. Something's wrong. When was the first time that you saw that situation and you thought you have to go dig into it?
I want to say that George Perry Floyd has taught me a lot.
I know.
I was in the jungle with Zach Voorhees, and it was May 25th. And Zach's just like, says, Mimi, can you come and choke me? And I'm like, what? And he's like, I'm doing the George Floyd challenge. And I tentatively knelt on his neck, and he could speak and breathe. And then I said, well, Zach, if you want to know, I need to call the medical examiner. So this is May 26th, call the medical examiner in the evening. And they say the official autopsy report is going to take weeks and weeks and weeks. And then literally hours later, CNN drops the preliminary reports, of course, to start sowing discord. And then the day after that, I reached out to Giovanni Thunstrom. And so to tell your audience, the real timeline is really to illustrate a book that I'm still working on, because real investigations take time. I'm about 85% done. And but it's really to, I wanted to see the timeline. Right. And I've gleaned so much from it, and now I'm sharing it with the world. Okay, so I called Giovanni Thunstrom, the boss of George at the Latina Conga. And he says certain things that sound like talking points to me, like black and white, strangled, that was urine, coming, that he peed on himself, very sure. And then he talks to me about Maya, who I tried, Maya Santa Maria from El Nuevo, that I tried to reach out to, and they seem to be chummy chummy. Then I caught Bridget Floyd on TMZ, and I noticed that her shirt said, I can't breathe. And I thought to myself, huh, are print shops essential? Where did you get that t-shirt like the next day? Like, would you wear your sibling's last words? So I just did a simple search, and I searched, I can't breathe, Benjamin Crump, who I didn't know anything about, and George Floyd. And then I learned that, oh, Eric Garner said, I can't breathe 11 times. And of course, they're going to use this as the rallying cry. lockstep in bringing the masks. Like that day of the event, Thomas Lane is sporting a face diaper. And then the supposed paramedics at the end and Maurice busts one out. Then the next day on, promptly, less like 24 hours later, they're having a press conference on the steps of City Hall and everyone is masked. And Jacob Fry, the Justin Trudeau knockoff, is there. So that was enough. And then I kept on covering it. And then prior to the Derek trial, I looked at all the notes I have and I'm like, why don't I write a book? Right. And it was only later, after Derek's trial, that I purchased all the exhibits. And Joel Gilbert, who you know, and Jack,
yeah, he's a friend,
especially Joel, who did the Trayvon Martin hoax, right, was really integral in supporting me and in uncovering the cover-up that no one on this planet has talked about. And you know, Zach would tease me and say, "Miriam, you're obsessed." But Joel said, "This is an event of the century or the decade, and you're the only one who's actually looking into it. That makes you a fucking genius." Excuse my language.
Okay.
So I took that as opposed to being obsessed, because it's been, I've looked under every nook and cranny, so that I know with authority, just like I learned about the bees. That's how I am. I obsess about something and I can't do it half-assed. There's too much half-assery, as you know, Mel.
I do. Yeah, well, that's what a real journalist does. So what was the exact date? So just so people remember, because people don't remember, this event has been so manipulated. So and if people don't really understand that how much money went into, especially from the CCP and the Democratic Socialists of America, which are really communists, and the Open Society, and all the people that seek to destroy America from within and divide us by every which way they can to do so. This event, George Floyd event, was, we all have to look back. We can't keep going forward. We have to look back how this one event changed America, I believe, for the far worse. But here's the thing. So when was that? Because we were in the lockdown.
Right.
Were we in the lockdown when that happened?
We were in the lockdown and people, is May 25th, Memorial Day, 2020, and people were getting antsy. And so I say in the film that this allowed us to go from virus to violence.
Right.
And the book is called The Multi-Layered PSYOP Examined, because I say that if George Floyd was a stone, he would have killed a lot more than two birds. It has a multi-purpose. And I would even go as far, Mel, to say that they use this event to increase the amount of vaccinations in Black people, because they are the number one vaccine hesitant population. And I found NIH studies looking to Black Lives Matter for the messaging to adopt towards increasing vaccine confidence. So they know Black lives don't matter. Now all of our lives don't matter. And so I would say, the Black community be like, oh, look, the government cares about racism. This vaccine must be safe. And in the end, this had nothing to do with racism, even though I, a brown person, I was just learned last week, Mel, that you could be brown, but anti-Black. I didn't know
and
that.
I'm pretty sure you're also a white supremacist. So let's just be.
Yes. Let's not forget that.
I mean, but here's the thing. So let's go back. So you bring up Benjamin Crump. I was horrified last week that they threw out in Florida the case that I thought was would have opened a lot of eyes, which was that Benjamin Crump put up a fake witness during the Zimmerman trial. And this was the beginning of Black Lives Matter, hands up, don't shoot, you know, the whole story. People do not know. And if anyone hasn't seen Joel Gilbert's The Trayvon Hoax, it's very important that you see that. But it was just thrown out, his case, which was very valid, against Crump, the parents. This is just in the last few weeks, because Larry Klayman was doing it and other people, and he was on to talk about some stuff. Wow. And I'm telling you that is true. And the problem that Crump is still practicing, but here's the other thing. He's been involved in every case that surrounds the Black Lives Matter. Two, the crazy part that we all have to think about is how during the lockdown Did they mobilize Black Lives Matter to incorporate it into all corporations, all media, all messaging? Riots in the streets all over the country that were called peaceful protests. You know, we don't even have to talk about what happened 2 years later on January 6th, which was actually a peaceful protest infiltrated. This right. was, and then at that time, Black Lives Matter was being heralded as some heroes. And now this all this time later, we know not only were they Marxists, but they were involved with the very socialist, Democrat, communist, congressional Black caucus in really studying Marxism with the CCP. We can trace CCP money to the Black Lives Matter movements. Not that difficult to do. So now we're here, and I look back and I think, was George Floyd set up? Was he, were they, because they're in Joel's thing and looking into yeah. Trayvon at yeah. the time, they were looking for, they were waiting for the right incident, right. in my opinion.
Right.
What do you yes. think happened there?
I want to address that. I want to ask you as well. So Joel, like, so on one end of the spectrum is, let's say Joel would say that the Benjamin Crump gets dozens of these cases and they can just pick one and have a field day.
Right.
And then on the other end, Sean Hibbler, I'll use him as an example, who edited my film and had done a film in August 2020 called Psychological Operation, that he thinks it's all fake. And I stand in the middle, and everything that I say in my book, I bring the receipts, and only in the end will I venture. I think I've earned, you know, an opinion yeah. to say what I believe. But because of the I can't breathe, I personally don't think that it was plucked. I believe that, you know, Alexander Kang, one of the officers who's Black, had filed a motion on all things for George regarding him being an informant, either for the FBI
right.
or the MPD. So arguably when he was released in Texas, he spent 5 years on aggravated robbery. Perhaps he was recruited as an informant. And in my investigation, I wonder if Minneapolis, Texas to Minneapolis, is a drug corridor for the Sinaloa cartel. And sure enough, it is. He had a truck driving license. They say that he didn't pass the final license. Maya had a trucking company. So was he driving trucks? So I personally believe that there was premeditation. And let's not forget also in the movie, I show the arrest in 2019. So right. during the trial, they brought Officer Scott Crichton, who was now retired, who Ellison, who's corrupt, and Steve Schleicher, who is a prosecutor, bring in Scott. And they say, okay, tell us about 2019, May 6th. And he said it was a narcotic sting operation. They say, oh, you mean a traffic stop? It's like, no, I mean a narcotics investigation. Oh, you mean a traffic stop? So when they found out that he wasn't going to lie, they dismissed him and he got relegated to defend on behalf of Derek. But Judge Cahill forbid establishing or showing the whole video because George wasn't on trial, right? So they didn't want to really show the truth that George did almost the exact same thing. So I think about what if they said, you know, that thing that you did, we're going to make you Rodney 2.0. Just keep on saying, I can't breathe. And if some of the players know this is going to happen. So what if it was like a sleeping beauty that something was, he was supposed to be resuscitated, but then certain players know that
he can't.
Maurice gave him, it's like playing Russian roulette, like I say in the movie. And Maurice, there was one time I was speaking to him and I said, you know, that it's like playing Russian roulette with these drugs. And he just got quiet and goes, I didn't know. And he, I don't think, wants to admit to himself the role that he's played because he's still convinced that it's the knee to the neck. But if George wasn't on the slew of drugs that day, would he have died with, you know, during also the trial, that restraint technique? One, they could have used the hobble, which looks a lot more slave-like to hobble someone's right, legs yeah. to their feet. And And in the trial, they had an image of an officer with a neck, a knee around the neck area, and they scrubbed it. They didn't show it. This was a sham show trial. And tomorrow is the live stream oral appeal. The appeal lawyer is different from Eric Nelson, and he or his partner wrote an 82-page brief that is so well written, because I believe in our constitutional right to a fair trial and innocent until proven guilty.
Right. I mean, he had no chance of a fair trial. Besides, so much at that point had been invested in Black Lives Matter, triggered off of the George Floyd incident. I follow all the money. $100 million, you know, within a very short period of time was transferred into all these CRT, diversity, equity, inclusion. And believe me, none of these, you and I have talked about it on other shows, all of the things they instituted, defund the police, no bail laws, these DAs all over, the mandatory vaccinations, CRT, diversity, equity, inclusion, getting rid of you know, different things in the education system that actually help, especially not just gifted kids, but they got rid of a lot of programs that help both sides, gifted and struggling children. A lot of this stuff is the worst for the Black community.
Yeah.
So all these things that they were implementing through Black Lives Matter were really the people that suffered the most. I'm in New York City. I'm telling you that no bail, no jail, defund the police has hurt the Black community and Black children in this city. Right. More than anything else. And, you know, we're at a place where if you look back, it was impossible for it to be an organic, you know, movement that grew out of that. And I really do connect it back to the same money involved in the original Hands Up, Don't Shoot, which was a lie, and all of that. And you know what's crazy, Miriam, in your movie, I'm watching it, and all I keep thinking is, this was a long game. This was come back and you look at Weatherman Underground and Frank Marshall Davis and Obama, all of Obama's mentors and all of these people involved in Chicago and all of that. This is what they wanted. They wanted a violent revolution that would destroy America from within so they could institute basically communism in the name of equity. And here we are. And it worked beautifully until the last year and a half when people started really waking up. But we have to, because I woke up one day, my YouTube channel, 100,000 subs, all of my videos gone. And here's the crazy thing, Miriam, this is why I know we're both on the list, which is okay with me, is because, I went to the Wayback Machine to see if I could find my videos.
Yeah.
Only the most benign survived. Right.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing that they also scrubbed the Wayback?
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Crazy.
But I did a big piece, a big show also because Kathy O'Brien was involved with Barry Seal and on what happened to Barry Seal and the whole setup there. And then I did another one on another setup by the government that nobody believed was real. And that was a different one in Afghanistan. But I have to tell you, this was a psyop in America that are very similar to what we've been doing for decades with the CIA, with National Endowment for Democracy, and all of these groups that go into foreign nations to disrupt and overthrow through color revolutions.
Right.
I believe that this was part of a color revolution, and that was used as a tactic. The question is, did George Floyd know it?
Right.
Or was he used? What are your thoughts on the bigger picture of the significance of the event?
There's things that I found that are not in the film that I haven't really spoken to publicly. I'll brush on it now. I bought George Floyd's debt from Cup Foods and I ran a FOIA for his social security number. And I had to wait a year till I found the private eye that was courageous enough to run it for me. And I was asked, what are you going to find? What are you looking for? And I said, I don't know. I recognize patterns. I want to just look. And I found a $5 million judgment order for a baby mama that no one has heard of, a son that nobody has heard of, dated May 1st, 2020.
Wow.
For $5 million. George would have to be making $1.7 million a year to justify that. When I calculated the back pay, it was a whopping $44,000. And he was only on record on paper making about $1,000 a month back in 2007. When I went back, I called the child courts. I called the estate. I called district court of that area in Texas. Nobody could tell me what I was looking at. I even sent them a screen grab. And then when I contacted the PI, he said it was now a trace. So due to my calls, they scrubbed. I don't know what it is I'm looking at. I have that evidence. And also, it's interesting, you know, when you say the long, it is all about the long game. They're not interested in short-term gratification. Tavistock is all about that. And when they leaked the Daily Mail, leaked the body-worn footage that Ellison was sitting on. It was with the Daily Mail, and I was in the jungle. And right away, I'm like, okay, I'm going to contact the guy and ask him how he found this. First thing I thought to myself when I saw this footage is like, what grown man acts like this? Could you act this way? Could I act this way? No way.
No.
And it turned out it was an editor that I used to give vapid Hollywood gossip to back in another life,
right,
for In Touch. He told me at the end, he goes, what is it with all you conservatives and George Soros? And I didn't even tell him I was a conservative.
Right. It's not conservatives, it's humanity.
Right. The Daily Mail, it turns out, Lord Northcliffe was friends with the Rothschilds, and the Daily Mail is definitely a publication that seeds the narrative with discord and disinfo. And one of the initial people was David Lloyd George? So I found it funny, the Lloyd George yeah, Floyd, in some early iterations of George's name, they spelled it Lloyd. So did he know? What if he was owned? You know, he's owned. There's no way he could pay $5 million. So if he's owned and he's an agent or a bad actor, and they don't exactly know exactly what it is they're doing. But again, if there's like, we're going to make you Rodney 2.0, you're going to be immortalized forever. And if the initial plan, again, this is my theory, that he was going to survive, but somehow, because people still all the time tell me, Mel, he's alive. So, you know, I turn to you. What do you think after seeing what happened in the ambulance?
Right.
And you see it from 7:30 to the end.
I don't think that that's true. I tend to lean towards what I believe it shows in the film, which is I don't think he was supposed to die, or if he was, he didn't know it. But right. But you know, I will say that what is also, listen, I just want to say to everyone watching, it's not pretty to look at things that happen on this scale, but I don't think people fully grasp how infiltrated and captured the United States is, and where we are, the stakes of losing this nation, and that we, the people of the United States, need to demand transparency on many, many things, including this, and not just for what it triggered, but how would that have happened? The full scale of the international public-private partnership, the whole Davos world, the whole socialist democratic socialists of America, all the communists, which is what they are, all of these people that are involved in basically every left-wing cause that is really, I know that there's a lot of, I call them useful idiots, unfortunately, it's just a term. There's a lot of people that think that all of these George Soros and CCP-backed nice named NGOs are for the good of America. They are for the destruction of America from the inside out. And the people that they have march on the streets, which I still don't, I'm still shocked at the amount of people that marched for Black Lives Matter, for the Women's March, which I still don't know what that was about. It's some kind of, it's a whole nother show.
Yeah.
For all of these things, for abortion. And there's not people marching in the street about our borders. There's not people marching in the street about the money and what's really going on in Ukraine. There's not people marching in the street about a government that puts out a $1.7 trillion bill that doesn't benefit we the people at all. So you have to know that these groups are fomenting and rallying their troops because it's an emotional, psychological. I look at some of the stuff from you know, Cass Sunstein with his nudge theory. You know, he had a lot of power during the Obama administration, then went on to work for the World Health Organization behavioral modification. Now he's somewhere with his wife running USAID, which is not good. But the psychological aspect of this. But one thing that I've always had a question about, and I know that you looked into it, why would a small guy that worked at Cup Foods run out and confront a giant, huge, muscular man over $20.
Right. Well, yeah, therein lies the rub for on so many levels, because the policy wasn't ever to call. You don't, it's the Secret Service that deals. And it's like, I got accosted on the Hollywood Walk of Fame by a 6'7" guy. No one came. The police didn't come. I waited an hour.
Right.
They're going to come. They came in less than 4 minutes for a forgery in progress with regulars. So, and that's why I bring attention to the fact that they both had counterfeits. And how Maurice got into my film is that I had a suspicion or a hunch that he was an informant. Right. And I did a FOIA. And I was like, oh, I'm right. But what happened was he acquiesced and gave them some information, then said that he only gave them information for someone who was already in jail. And then he stopped responding to them because he got arrested. So there's also unwitting informants.
Right.
So I thought he set George up initially. I did not expect to strike a relationship with Maurice. But it turned out that I ended up doing a two-hour interview on right. the second year anniversary. And I think, you know, he told me, Mimi, in black and white, I read like a piece of shit. And I said, yeah, I thought you were a piece of shit. So I see now also how they used him and the other side. It's like, this is not a, I'm not a, giving props to the government. And I want to say that if you have a psychological operation, people are blinded by their own, by their blind spots. So right. they're compartmentalized. So not everybody knows everything. And let's say Chris Martin, the boy who took the 20, he has been a victim of racism and brutality. So I had asked him, I interviewed him, not on camera, a year and a half ago. And I asked him, just curious, like, so do you have to take a PCR nostril rape test when you're going to court? And he offered, without knowing who I am, I'm not getting the vaccine. And I said, why? He goes, it's a little too new world order for me. But could he, in his mind, conceive a bigger play? Like this is an onion. And we who look into these things are like, oh, now this is bullshit. This is bullshit. And so they can't see beyond the racism and police brutality that they faced. And I chose to highlight Maurice because he really shows to me that only some Black lives matter. And I called right. Benjamin Crump. How about this guy's Black life? And tell me, why wouldn't the Floyd family, which you see in also Candace Owens' film, they didn't pick up the belongings of George? And I interviewed Teresa Scott, his roommate, who told me, you can call me anytime. She didn't know about a lot of these, like she didn't know about Maurice. There's so many. And so I asked her, did you meet the family? And she said, no. I said, why? She said, because there were celebrities. And I said, oh, do you think Shannon Tatum took it out of the goodness of his heart to go to Houston and attend a funeral? Do you think he got paid? It's lockdown. This is a good gig. You wear your face diaper. So she's like, oh, that's a good point. So it's really, to me, very sus that they didn't pick up his belongings. They never met with Maurice. Who are these people, the Floyd family?
Right.
But they're rich. I could tell you that.
Yeah. And you know, anytime anyone brings it up, they threaten new lawsuits for defamation.
Exactly. And I want to say, yes, there is no lawsuit against Ye. That is posturing. I looked into Pacer. I called Witherspoon firm. There's no lawsuit. This is to make sure there's other people like myself. And I want to say also, I got threatened by a lawyer. I found a paper document saying from a Tanner George that claimed he was the biological dad. So I called the firm, the estate rather, and you know, they could have told me, ah, this guy crazy, thought he's claiming to be the, so then 2 months leave messages. So then I called again. And I said, I've been commissioned to write a book and I worked for MSNBC, like wink, wink, I'm one of you, call. And she says to me, it's in your best interest not to write a book because there's a trademark. And I said,
a trademark on what?
On his name. I'll tell you. So I said, are you saying that in the United States of America, I'm not allowed to write a book on a public figure? And she said, yeah. I said, oh, let me record that. I was walking into my office. She said, I'm going to give you permission. I said, well, let me write that down. Click. I look up. I had already spoken to Meshugo Manuga, a guy on
June. Oh, wow.
June 5th, 2020, the Variety did an article on the guy who bought the trademark. Well, he told me it was inactive. He was in Florida. And then I find out a very high-end firm has filed 12 different trademarks, everything under the sun, Mel, from keychains to seminars to pillows.
It's so disgusting.
Creating a veritable theme park for George Floyd. Just money, money, money. Disgusting, yeah.
Super yeah, and disgusting. I wonder, did all these people sign off on all the plaques and memorials all over the country that have come up since? I can't even believe it, because his real history is he was a straight up criminal. And I'm sorry, he didn't deserve to die, and none of that deserved to happen. But I will say, I fully believe that they chose this flawed of a figure again, because it's part of the long game. It's part of up is down, left is right. Justice is crime. Crime is justice. Law is order. You know, law and order are, you know, passé. You know, criminals aren't really criminals. Yeah. They were just victims of systematic racism. The whole story, because all the numbers about from what came from that. I mean, it started obviously under Obama and Holder and with Zimmerman and the lie of hands up, don't shoot and all of that. But here's the thing. Again, America is still 13% Black. And we are at a place where I believe the Black community is really waking up. Not as much as we'd like, but certainly I talk to a lot of people in that community that have had it, that really know that all of this was a fraud, that Black Lives Matter did nothing for them or their families or their future or their lives or their education or any of it. And that really no money of the 100 million estimated that we know of, there were billions that were funneled through after George Floyd got to those communities. And it's up to every individual in this nation right now. You know, I don't believe there's a left and right, a Republican, a Democrat.
Right.
I think
me either.
That's to keep us mind controlled into thinking there's an illusion of choice. There's a uniparty that's run by billionaires and trillionaire oligarchy technocrats that are aligned with the globalists, meeting a lot of them this week in Davos, right in our faces. But the good news is we know. I also believe the Black community on a grand scale is much more awake now that they were used dramatically. You know, now something I want to tap on is Ellison. I had on a great guy, Trevor Loudon, this week. We talked a lot about the Socialist Democrats of America, the communists in America, the people in government, especially Congress, Senate, that are aligned with the CCP and communism. It's not a coincidence that this happened in Ellison's district.
Right. Yeah.
And what has during this entire period, he micromanaged this case, which is unusual. How much of a part do you think he played in the entire from before to during to after to still?
I think he was integral. And in the federal trial of the three officers, which was not covered.
I know. You covered it in casual. That's it.
I covered as much as I could. And I called, I'll just say this, that I called one day Lou Rugassi of Carrot 11. He goes, my boss told me not to speak to people like you. Your boss? What, a mafioso? People like me? Wow. So to answer your question, let's start by he swore on the Quran to be ushered in. And arguably that's when he, you know, stopped serving America, and he showed up at the federal trial. He's the one who held back the footage. He wasn't even supposed to be on the case. He replaced Mike Freeman. They fired Freeman, who thought he was going to work with Ellison. And I think he kept his eyes. You know, for instance, like during the Derek, Darnella had a public representative, a publicist, and she took a picture with Ellison, and Ellison allowed it. He didn't say this isn't allowed, we shouldn't be doing this. No, So
he didn't care that he looked biased at all.
No,
it was very obvious that he was, you know, pulling this the puppet master behind a lot of this, yes. A lot of the show, the PR.
His role with the Muslim Brotherhood, you probably know more about him than I do. I don't spend too much time in my book and don't spend any time in the film, but I mention his role and keeping an eye on his alliances with Antifa and the Muslim Brotherhood.
The Muslim Brotherhood, as we know, and I just want to make clear, is not anything of what people think. They are a very well-funded, very high level. The people that are on the ground that think that they're running a jihad, that's not the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is a communist organization that is, you know, really, really aligned with the Socialist Democrats, the Socialist Democrats for America. They're very aligned with the Democratic Party. They're very aligned with a lot of people that are financed by the Communist Chinese Party. And we have been greatly deceived by the Muslim Brotherhood. And I know it's dangerous for people to say that, but we should be able to say it about anything. But I will say that, again, I don't care if you're Muslim, Jewish, Christian, Black, White, Asian, Latino, whatever you are, if you are an American, you deserve to know the truth. And if you keep getting behind different factions and groups that are there to divide you by stupid things, and you don't realize at the very top is a small group of billionaires and trillionaires funding everything, including the Muslim Brotherhood, including Antifa, Black Lives Matter, the women's movement, LGBTQ. It is a very small group of elitists. I call them the Fourth Reich. They are aligned internationally. This is happening all over the world. Remember, they took the George Floyd thing and then exported it into every nation where I believe we have the National Endowment for Democracy and CIA, you know, black ops that run color revolutions. And everywhere that I believe those people are functioning and active to you know, cause color revolutions overseas. And, you know, they're always kind of manipulating. And this is really about the great game and things that the American people don't even realize yet have been happening in our names worldwide. But a lot of me thinks that if you look at the color revolutions that have been done all over the planet, honestly paid for by us and the Five Eyes Nations and NATO, but really our taxpayer dollars more than anything else, and our military industrial complex money machine. But I will tell you, I feel like we're in a color revolution. I feel like George Floyd was integral to triggering, because if you look back, even the Ukraine in 2014, what triggered that revolution was a lie. You know, and what triggered, you know, revolution, all these color revolutions all over the world. It's always some kind of criminal situation that you find out 20 years later was a setup. Right. And that's why I think it's really important that not only people watch your movie, but watch it with an open mind. And also remember, Miriam, you get into this a lot. You talk about it a lot. It's the subtitle.
Yeah.
These people are great. This started way before Nazi Germany, but was perfected there and came here with a lot of people with Operation Paperclip, a lot of Poison Ivy League, psychologists, psychiatrists, you know, the nudge theory, all this stuff. The American people have to separate their emotions and what they and the need to believe that this, that, you know, like when Reagan said, the scariest words are, "I'm the government, I'm here to help you." The need to believe that because we're American and because our these institutions are American institutions, our intelligence agencies and all these people, or the NGOs that claim to be for good, that maybe, just maybe, you know, that's not the case. And that is why we are where we are in America right now.
Yeah. So much has been captured. I don't know, in the version you saw, I end with a Myron Fagan quote about destroying America and using the blacks to convince the dark races that the whites are oppressing them, and then the whites fill them with guilt, and that's how they'll bring America to their cause. This is in 1976 when I heard that. It really cemented what I was trying to share, because I could be going on, you know. I didn't look into Black Lives Matter like Candace did, where that money went. I look at the money in the family, but that's in the book. I also want to share with the audience that about 3,000 bills have been considered and changing, and the duty to intervene. So in this multi-layered PSYOP, when I was listening to the federal trial, I'm like, it's like the manual is on. It's almost like they're doing this post-mortem, looking at what happened to their live exercise. And they say, someone in the trial says, it asks, do you have a duty to intervene exercise? We designed it, but we didn't play it out. Well, right. I would argue that this was the duty to intervene, because now, as a rookie, you can tell your field training officer, your boss, move out of the effing way. And even though Thomas Lane did literal compressions on the guy and goes into the ambulance, he was found guilty of 3 years. Also, to share with the audience, it's not in the movie either. It's in the book. If I were to ask you who organized the funeral, you know, and I say, like, while we were, I had to bury my uncle, go to a Zoom funeral. I know. That this guy got 4 funerals. It says another FU. They give you like FUs, and only the people who know see what they're messaging. But it was the government that organized the funeral.